It's a full working day from 9 to 4 for trainers and trainees. That's up to 12 kids and youngsters daily. Here in Iran Autism Association, we are faced with medium to severe autism, but hope prevails. Repetition, habit, belief is the order of the effort mantra to improve trainees' conditions. There's plenty to be said on the matter of ASD and EB and obstacles they meet along the way, namely sanctions. So stay with me, Leila Faramerzi, on Iran Today. Autism is a neurological disorder, usually graded in severity along a spectrum, ASD. It causes problems with thinking, feeling, language, and relating to others. And so, medications prescribed serve as a means of chemical restraint rather than having a legitimate therapeutic purpose. That is to say, kids or sufferers are treated for conditions often associated with autism, including anxiety, hyperactivity, and aggression. We are talking anything from sleep disorders to violent meltdowns. The 7-year-old Iran Autism Association started its program for severe cases 6 months ago. Girls are in mind too, but resources are still limited and demand on the part of families has been higher for boys to receive care outside home. I got to talk to all sorts of professionals at either center of the association, namely athletic young trainers. It was touching to see them put their energy to use in childcare with a complication. Here's an expert opinion by Mr. Tavakkoli.
Medication as part of the treatment for autism can manage some of the symptoms. We provide occupational therapy for sensory, motor, and cognitive functions, speech therapy, behavioral therapy, and also music and art therapies such as painting with watercolor and so on for children so they can acquire skills by the age of 7, enter the education and school process, and learn reading and writing skills. Our interventions will help the children to easily perform simple and repetitive tasks after a certain age.
Sensory issues autistic people have dysregulate them further, which makes training all that much more sensitive. Say if a caregiver yells at a child in an effort to rein in behavior, it's likely to have the opposite effect. We met Mr. Fallah, a lead trainer, as he was working hands-on. His background is sports.
Every child is different. One can reach a particular level in 1 month, another might take a year. If you consider 10,000 autistic children, every single one of them needs their own special care. It's not like one guideline applies to all. That's what makes things more challenging. The coach's decisions at the moment matter. The decision made at the moment could be a right or a wrong one.
In this episode, I'm telling of how sanctions have hampered the inflow of medical supplies and pharmaceutical raw materials to this country. Also, of how they've helped domestic corruption further degrade the Iranian economy, which means families can't readily buy medical supplies, even if available. Autism and the Iranian Autism Association are our case study of the day. A case study of deprivation and survival by self-help and domestic help. But autism is not the only condition at stake. Ms. Javadi is manager of the association's health unit. She shares her medical outlook with us.
The families are procuring the medications by any means, although the economic problems and the massive inflation in their prices have created challenges for accessing the medicines. Currently, families are facing problems in getting their hands on medicines used for seizures, including Depakote and so on. Medicines prescribed for hyperactive children like Ritalin are among those the families report to have become hard to find or rising so much in price. For example, a pack of Ritalin, which used to be sold for 45,000 tomans, is now 125,000. This rise in price for a medication that the child is constantly using is too much.
EB, epidermolysis bullosa, is a rare hereditary disease or condition. It usually manifests in infancy or early childhood with very fragile skin that develops blisters or wounds like third-degree burns. There is no cure, but that means the flow of medical equipment for pain relief and blister control must never stop. With age, however, symptoms of mild forms of the disease or condition, rather, can improve. Our skin is our protective cover. Imagine being uncomfortable in your own skin 24/7, or every hard, flat surface being a hazard if you bump into it to chap your skin. I got to talk to Mr. Golpayagani for a former program on EB. He's executive director of EB Home for Butterfly Children.
The U.S. claims that food and medications are not subject to sanctions. As the father of an EB patient, as well as 750 other EB patients, I can tell you that it is not so in practice. I am feeling the sanctions. I am feeling the sanctions, for example, in dressing here for EB patients.
EB patients, or butterfly children, live with constant pain and stress, with levels varying, of course. They often require extensive bandaging from head to toe and are at risk of malnutrition and other problems. Bathing and wound management can take 3 to 5 hours at a time. We know what will happen if they don't bandage up. Blistering and flaking, actually, can occur mechanically as the sufferer is just sitting down to force out a chat. The most painful disease you've ever heard of. That's how dermatologists, US dermatologists, have described EB. That's a genetic mutation that occurs in every one in 30,000 to 50,000 live births globally. But each butterfly suffers a pain enough for the whole of humanity and can't be overlooked. As long as there's life, it requires relief. EB patients are referred to as butterfly children because of the delicacy and fragility of their skin, which can grow over. Relief is what they seek, as do their families. The only relatively real relief is through specialized foam dressings that reduce and protect blisters. The best are made by the Swedish pharmaceutical company, Mölnlycke. For Iran's 800 to 1,200 EB sufferers, accessing the supplies became close to impossible since the 2018 US pullout from the JCPOA and crippling sanctions that ensued. But then in May 2020, UNICEF made a surprise announcement that a German-financed shipment of wound dressings from the Swedish company had been procured by the UN and shipped to Iran. The shipment, which weighs just under 6 metric tons, was to be a one-time shipment, but it came at a welcome time, given corona-inflicted travel restrictions which stopped respite in the form of wound dressings and bandages coming in with travelers. To see how far our kids of today's focus have come, let's go back to the Autism Association. U.S. sanctions and restrictions on the export of drugs and medical equipment to Iran have shortened the breath of all patients suffering from special diseases and conditions such as cancer, hemophilia, epilepsy, and thalassemia. Mr. Mohammadi is on the Iran Autism Association Board of Directors, and he is himself father to an autistic son.
The U.S. claims that medications aren't subject to sanctions, but in practice they are, as evidenced by the pharmaceutical companies who are saying they're having problems importing medicine. The importers and producers are facing problems bringing in raw materials. They're also concerned with foreign currency exchange rates. We might suddenly realize there's a drug that plays a key role in treating autism, although some might object, arguing that there's no cure for autism. But children are using medications, they need to improve their attention and concentration. They need to calm down as they're mostly hyperactive and are restless. This means that we need medicines used for managing other symptoms for autistic children, which are quite expensive.
Thing is, Mr. Mohammadi thinks it's paramount to import drugs for quality. That's contrary to our lady doctor's opinion. But they agree on one thing, that it matters which company, Iranian or otherwise, the kids buy from.
You see, for example, the Depakine pills that are produced overseas are way better in terms of quality compared to their domestic counterparts, both in terms of controlling restlessness and lack of attention and focus. On the other hand, we are experiencing different effects from the same medicine which is produced by two companies. For example, the risperidone, which is being produced inside the country, especially by the Suphan Pharmaceutical Company, varies in its effectiveness. I've seen that in the case of my own child, who responded very well to risperidone made by Suphan, but not to that of Dr. Arbady's company. We never realize why this difference exists.
You see, Iranian pharmaceutical companies are also working very hard. But what's important to us is the accessibility of the medications for the families. We don't want a family of a child who's displaying behavioral problems all day long to be unable to buy the medication they need in their own city. We don't want them to have to travel long distances to Tehran or its nearby cities just to purchase the drugs. This is heartbreaking. It would be very helpful if the pharmaceutical companies can meet the minimum needs of the families and distribute their products across the country.
Although less than before, there's still plenty of vitamins and ordinary drugs in the market, but the U.S. is making its utmost attempts to prevent Iran from purchasing vital medicine and necessities for, say, cancer patients. Helping kids with debilitating conditions means going as far as preparing them for a measure of independence in society and holding down a job even. It may sound ambitious looking at Iran's unemployment rate of around 10% and more, but then looking at paintings by some autistic individuals, it doesn't seem too ambitious after all, except that shortages can get in the way of progress. Shortages with medicine and facilities, say.
Autistic children are working in production lines everywhere. You can see that in our country too. Some are answering the phone, doing simple tasks such as typing. They are not distracted while they work. Or they can be presenters in a place like a museum, showing the visitors around. Because that's a repetitive task and they might have to do it 20-30 times a day. This is a simple task for which autistic children can be easily trained to do. They are usually quite punctual. Don't talk on their phones or get distracted by their cell phones like other people, and are generally more organized in their jobs because they are doing the jobs based on their specific talents.
I asked how that would help a society with less than satisfactory employment levels for people unafflicted even.
When we talk about employment for autistic children, some might say there are many people unemployed in Iran, let alone autistic ones. But it's not a matter of who is normal. These children need supportive regulations, and those laws have been written for them. The laws have been enacted by the parliament and communicated to businesses that can use these children as their workforce with special conditions. Part of their salaries are paid by governmental organizations, so they can be employed. We can't assume that all rights are ours, and we are the only ones entitled to go on the streets, have a walk in the park, visit amusement parks, and go to cinemas just because we are healthy and don't suffer from any disability. An autistic child has the right to vote. They and their fathers are paying taxes. They are also paying municipal taxes.
Plenty more to see and hear. But first, a quick media review to see what other news outlets have to say. Here it is. In talking of U.S. sanctions, naturally expectations will be directed at the U.S.'s first man. Common Dreams reads, to end collective and cruel punishment, Biden must go further on sanctions relief. The devastation and suffering unleashed on Venezuelans and Iranians as a result of U.S. maximum pressure sanctions has been unfathomable. Iranians continue to suffer from the consequences of maximum pressure sanctions that have devastated the economy, paralyzing the poor and pushing the middle class into poverty. According to the Wall Street Journal, economic sanctions led to an upsurge in unemployment and a depreciation in Iran's currency, the rial, by 80% against the dollar. The rising inflation in Iran, accompanied by dangerous rhetoric from U.S. officials, makes it increasingly difficult for Iran to import essential medicine and medical equipment. A report from Human Rights Watch found that unilateral sanctions disproportionately impact Iranians with rare medical conditions, such as epilepsy, leukemia, and those suffering with chronic eye injuries from exposure to chemical weapons used during the Iran-Iraq War. The report further notes that women have suffered severe complications after cesarean section performed under non-standard anesthesia, the only anesthesia available due to sanctions. Now, Iran's health sector may have suffered U.S. sanctions, but it's also had achievements, according to Iran's UN representative. Tasnim News reads, UN endangers Iranian nation's health towards political goals, says the envoy. Iran's permanent envoy to the United Nations identifies the United States' illegal and inhumane sanctions against the country as a means of jeopardizing the health of the Iranian people in pursuit of political purposes. Majid Takht-Ravanchi, that is, made the statements at the UN General Assembly's high-level meeting on AIDS. He spoke on Iran's accomplishments in the area of HIV-positive patients' health and those who are affected by the phenomena. The official noted how Iranian scientists had managed to enable prevention of the disease's transfer from affected mothers to their children and also contain the disease's adverse effects. Despite the notable progress, Iran is still suffering from the sanctions that prevent its access to medical products, technology, and cooperation with the international financial institutions, he said. Now, what's to be done when autism combines with corona? IRNA says adults with autism in Iran vaccinated against COVID-19. According to IRNA, Iran Autism Association reported in its website that a group of autistic adults over 18 years old were vaccinated against the coronavirus disease, getting their second dose of the vaccine. People with autism are more likely to be affected by different pandemic diseases. In addition, quarantine is much harder for them due to the complicated conditions with which these people are entangled. As a result, their parents and supporters prefer to keep them at home despite all difficulties. Many of these people need ongoing rehabilitation. COVID-19 disrupts this routine. The closure of schools, the lack of classes, and rehabilitation sessions for these people have all caused many problems, like exacerbation of nervous symptoms and behaviors that have made quarantine much more difficult for them in case they get affected with the virus. Therefore, thanks to the efforts made by the Iran Autism Association in collaboration with Atiyeh Hospital and the Ministry of Health, Treatment and Medical Education, adults over 18 years old received their corona vaccines in three groups. That would be it for this section, but do stay with us. In charges and parents are looking to the greater government, including the legislature, for more help, as well as to their own capabilities. 5-6 years ago, some parents had declared they wanted to leave Iran for countries with nursing homes for autistic people. That's an astronomically expensive option with slim chances of acquiring foreign residency.
We engaged in talks with the parliament, especially with the health commission. They helped us sign into law a national autism document, which we drafted. The document was prepared by Iran's Autism Forum scientific experts, but had been stalled for years in the parliament. That's why we started our work and asked again. They helped us eventually, but the national autism document, with all the aspects considered for it, became a two-page document dubbed the National Autism Program, which was announced and signed by three ministers whose organizations are known as being in charge of autism.
Others said they were willing to work together and help establish a nursing home in Iran. Dr. Momeni in Sweden volunteered. And presently, many parents are involved and extend their services beyond their own suffering to help train classrooms full of kids. We have a case right here, predominantly active even after losing her own child. Perhaps because of losing her own child to an indirect autism-related accident.
I don't know. These are some matters that go back to the human beings themselves to decide what they are going to do now that they are living in this world. What was their purpose for being born? If they are here to make themselves useful and take steps to help their peers, they need to understand that this is something that could happen to them too. I think we should want something for others that we want for ourselves. We need to take this step.
In 2019, some 62 centers offering treatment and rehabilitation services to autistic patients were operating under the Medical Sciences University's supervision nationwide, which mostly offer services to those financially struggling patients, a supportive package including occupational therapy, speech therapy, behavioral interventions, and counseling services have been scheduled to be provided to those children and their families by the aforesaid centers. Tehran Times quoted the Health Ministry's head of the Department for Transplantation and Treatment of Diseases at the time, saying his ministry had doubled the subsidies allocated to 4,000 autistic patients under the welfare organization's coverage, granting 10 million rials per patient. For an update, I refer to authority.
Well, the costs are very high based on our average. If a family wants to continue the child's behavioral therapy, it needs to pay at least 5 million tumans per month. This figure is too much for the families, given that many of them aren't covered by any insurance or services, so their problems will grow by the day. Or take this, for example, that most autistic children need to be anesthetized to receive their routine dental checkups, and that anesthesia is too costly for the families.
A problem that definitely grows with age, as Mr. Tavakoli reckons, is education and training.
They are growing up. They are teenagers and adults now. One of the problems we are facing is that we don't have high schools for these children. Most of the schools are secondary or early high school years. The second issue is that there aren't enough centers where they can learn professions. Children who have a moderate to good performance can learn professions and arts so they can enter society and be employed. Also, we don't have care centers for those who have weak performances. The number of those centers in the country could be fewer than your fingers.
It is estimated about 320,000 autistic individuals can be identified in Iran, approximately 35,000 of them being children under school age, that's up to 7 years of age. In the month that followed, Iran's welfare organization reportedly launched an online autism screening website for parents with children aged 2 to 5 years to refer to. Children found susceptible to autism were to be referred to the nearest welfare offices to confirm the disorder and receive subsequent rehabilitating services.
Our figures show there are about 30,000 autistic people in Iran. But considering the global rates, which may be true for Iran too, there are many more cases in Iran. It's curious how many cases are concentrated in some areas, but no one has conducted any pathological study to establish the underlying cause. One example is the Khuzestan province. I was born there. There is a registered population of autistic people there, which is larger than anywhere else. What's the reason? We don't know. The same goes for the northern parts of the country.
In January, it was reported 90 thalassemia patients lost their lives last year due to U.S. sanctions and a lack of drugs. In addition, another 60 young patients have died in the current year. A Human Rights Watch report from October 2019 references a letter sent by Swedish Mölnlycke to EB Home. That's Iran's largest NGO supporting EB patients. The UN report confirmed the company had decided not to conduct any business with Iran because of U.S. sanctions. According to EB Home, at least 15 butterfly children had died over the last year. As for our ASD trainers, they have bitter complaints but high hopes of their own.
Our main objective is to be able to integrate autistic children into society. We don't want the children to be separated or create a facility to keep them in. As much as we believe the elderly have to be present in the society as a consultant and not be confined to nursing homes. That's why the goal is integration.
That's it for today as we take leave of our Autism Association and friendly network. Thanks from the whole team, but do return to the box at the same times next week and each week after, as you never know what's on. Bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Buildings are collapsing into the sea. Infrastructure is melting. Hundreds are dying from extreme heat. Millions are without power. The ocean is literally on fire. The climate crisis is in the U.S., said Ellen Eskiales, communications director of the Youth Let Sunrise movement, in his statement recently. Dear listeners, in this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Time for Incrementalism is Over, says climate movement as extreme weather hits U.S. Stay tuned for more. With hundreds of thousands of acres burning across swathes of the U.S. West that have already endured record-breaking heat this summer, and mounting concerns about the GOP and centrist Democrats watering down federal infrastructure legislation, the climate movement reiterated demands for ambitious government action and investment. Progressives that called President Joe Biden's initial physical and human infrastructure proposal, the American Job and Families Plans, inadequate, have ramped up their criticism in the wake of a bipartisan deal Democrats want to pass alongside a reconciliation bill. A flooded New York City subway system, a collapsed condo in Florida, a pipeline-related fire in the Gulf of Mexico, and a fire tornado in California. Buildings are collapsing into the sea. Infrastructure is melting. Hundreds are dying from extreme heat. Millions are without power. The ocean is literally on fire. The climate crisis is in the U.S., said Ellen Eskiales, communications director of the Youth Let Sunrise movement, in a statement recently. And yet some Democratic politicians like Joe Biden are still pushing for a compromise on climate under the guise of bipartisanship, though it's actually just doing the bidding of Exxon lobbies, she added, pointing to an expose that provided insight on the company's lobbying efforts targeting key senators who are working on the infrastructure package. Ellis highlighted that the movement's demands aren't just focused on infrastructure legislation. Activists also want the president to use his executive power to deliver on his broad campaign promises to combat the climate emergency. Communities in every corner of the U.S., especially low-income communities and communities of color, are currently bracing for or suffering from the climate crisis. It is clear we need bold action now, she said. And despite these deadly climate disasters and videos of the Gulf of Mexico literally on fire after a pipeline leak, Biden is still refusing to stop Line 3, which will further endanger our air, our water, and lock us into more fossil fuel development. The Sunrise Lidl declared that this unprecedented weather must serve as a wake-up call for our politicians. The time for incrementalism is over. We need to call the bipartisan infrastructure plan what it is, the ExxonMobil plan. Politicians must stop entertaining a weak fossil fuel-backed plan, Skiala said, and instead seize on this historic opportunity to avert the climate crisis by investing in a mass mobilization of our society and economy, rebuilding the infrastructure we lost to the crisis, and protecting the lives of millions of Americans. If Biden and Democrats do not pass and sign trillions of dollars in climate investments, including a massive civilian climate corps, through a Democratic reconciliation bill she won, it will be a death sentence for our generation. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said recently that progressive lawmakers are united in opposing bipartisan legislation without a reconciliation bill, and one that takes bold and large action on climate by cutting down planet-heating emissions, helping frontline communities, and creating jobs. Ocasio-Cortez is leading the congressional fight for a civilian climate corps, OCC, with fellow Green New Deal champion Senator Ed Markey and efforts Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, notably endorsed recently, pledging to work with Sunrise activists. The chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Representative Pramila Jayapal, has also affirmed her position in recent days, tweeting that it is time to go big, bold, and fast on an infrastructure package that not only fixes our roads, bridges, and transit systems, but also invests in the care economy, climate action, and working facilities. Jayapal, whose state is among those suffering from wildfires and record heat, pointed out recently that triple-digit temperatures is another western state, California, in danger, a significant portion of the United States food supply, and repeated her call for climate action. Axis reported recently that wildfires were burning across more than 768,000 acres of land in 12 western U.S. states and over 500,000 acres in Canada amid another searing heat wave. The Boose Lake Fire in southern Oregon, which nearly doubled in size, has now been burning for 6 days straight, scorching over 150,000 acres. According to the New York Times, Charles Smith, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Medford, Oregon, said the fire was especially worrying because Oregon's fire season had only just begun. There is concern about how early this is starting and how far it has grown within a relatively short amount of time, he said. The Oregon fire has put pressure on the power grid that connects to neighboring California, leading Golden State officials to urge residents and businesses to conserve electricity recently. In the Mojave Desert, California's Death Valley recorded temperatures of a potentially record-setting 130 degrees Fahrenheit and 129.4 degrees Fahrenheit recently, according to the National Weather Service's preliminary figures. Experts continue to emphasize humanity's impact on climate and how that affects wildfires. The exceptional fire weather this year and in recent years does not represent random bad luck, Jacob Bendix, a Syracuse University professor who specializes in wildfire distribution, told the Los Angeles Times, adding, "It is among the results of our adding carbon to the atmosphere, results that were predictable and indeed that have been predicted for decades." Craig Clements, a professor of meteorology and director of the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center at San Jose State, echoed that message. Climate change is real, it's bad, and it's really affecting our fire weather and our fire danger, he told the newspaper. Its fingerprints are all over this stuff. The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight, addressing an OPCW meeting. Syria's mission to the UN body said the actions of the Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog contradicts the principles of impartiality, since the United States has the largest chemical arsenal in the world and the munitions pose a grave threat to international peace and security. The US, France, and Britain have long accused Syria of using chemical weapons against its people. This is while Syria surrendered its stockpile of chemical weapons back in 2014 to a joint mission led by the U.S. and the OPCW, which oversaw the destruction of the weaponry. For more on that, we're joined by our correspondent, Mohammed Ali, who's with us from the Syrian capital, Damascus. Mohammed, welcome to the program. Please tell us more about these recent comments coming from Damascus.
Yes, actually, the comments were from came out from the head of Syria's mission at the OPCW in a meeting there. Rani al-Rifai said that the OPCW has turned from a technical organization into a political tool in the hands of the United States, France, Britain, and other Western countries that have been implementing policies in line with the U.S. ones in order to pressure Syria and falsely accuse it various accusations, such as still having chemical weapons over here. Now, also, Rani al-Rifai said that Syria fulfilled all of its commitments when it joined the OPCW back in 2013. And, of course, we all remember how the international community acknowledged that Syria destroyed all of its chemical weapons. However, we still continue to hear accusations by the West that Syria still has chemical substances. Now, we also have to point out that head of Syria's mission, Rani al-Rifai, also criticized those claims by the United States and its allies that claim that Syria has chemical weapons, saying that those are lies and fabrications. Also, a very important point is Syria always argues and asks a question. Whenever those countries accuse Syria, Syria was in a state of advancing. Syria's army was advancing against terrorists. So there's a question. Why would a country like Syria use chemical weapons when, one, it has no chemical weapons, two, the ordinary weapons were doing the job against the terrorists?
All right, thanks a lot, Mohammed Ali, joining us from Damascus. Let's take a look at our guests for tonight's Spotlight. We have veteran war zone correspondent and political analyst with over 35 years of experience covering West Asia, North Africa, Mr. Elijah Magnea, joining us from Brussels. And also expert on West Asian affairs and former British ambassador to Syria, Peter Ford, joins us from Manchester. Let's start off with Mr. Ford in Manchester. Sir, Syria says that the Global Chemical Weapons Watchdog is no longer a technical organization but a political tool in the hands of the United States, the UK, and France to exert pressure on Damascus. How do you view these comments?
Yes, sadly, I have to agree 100% with that take on the OPCW. It's a tragedy that this very important international monitoring body should be corrupted in this way by being politicized by Western powers. The OPCW should be playing an impartial role and should be seen to be extremely impartial. But for the last few years, in decision after decision, it has shown that it is a puppet of the Western powers. Now, Britain and America in particular are responsible here. They have stuffed this organization with seconded officials from their own administrations who do not respect the impartiality of the OPCW but carry out the wishes of their masters in Washington and London. And this is basically why the OPCW is well on the way to being completely discredited.
Well, the organization's first president, Brazilian diplomat José Bustani, he backed and expressed his grave concerns over the tampering of the 2018 Duma report, fearing that the OPCW had become a tool of the U.S. government. Give us your take on those comments from the former head of the organization. Those are pretty much identical to what Damascus is saying right now.
Well, he's absolutely right, Mr. Bustani, and he's well placed to know, given his previous position. I'm afraid in the UN system, and I used to work in the UN after I left the British diplomatic service, I'm afraid in today's UN, if you don't follow the US narrative on important issues, you will never get to be Director General of an organization like OPCW. This organization and other agencies of the UN have become highly politicized by the Western powers just in the last 15 years. And he's absolutely correct that the initial report done by the technical inspectors who went to Duma produced a clear conclusion that there was no evidence of a chemical weapons attack. And this report was, once it got to headquarters in The Hague, was doctored by the Western officials working within the office of the Director General to produce the opposite conclusion. Why? Well, in order to justify the bombing of Syria, which has taken place even without waiting for the investigation by the US, by the OPCW inspectors.
Let's cross over now to Elijah Magnier in Brussels. Mr. Magnier, revelations, they suggest that the OPCW may have intentionally doctored its findings about the alleged gas attacks in Syria. The scandal, as we know, continued to grow throughout 2020 as OPCW experts. They came forward, they gave testimony as to how their findings had been completely manipulated or ignored in order to present a one-sided or quote-unquote incorrect view of events in order to further an agenda. Is that what Damascus meant when it repeatedly urged the chemical weapons watchdog to avoid politicizing Syrian issues?
Indeed. As your guest said, rightly said, the OPCW is politicized. And when José Bustani came out with his narrative saying that we are the inspectors of technical and scientists, and according to the scientist opinion, there is no chemical attack on Duma. And the reason why the OPCW is insisting is to justify the US, UK, and France attack on Damascus. And the whole world watched how the OPCW is lacking trust these days, particularly after the Duma attack. And it is obvious that a lot of pressure was put on the organization that needs honest watchdog and need honest observer and scientists to go on the site and tell us what's happening, but without taking a side and without being doctrinized by the superpower or the US or the UK opinion. Otherwise, there's no need for them to go and inspect on the ground if the decision is made before the attack.
I'm going to stay with you, Mr. Magnier. Why would the OPCW, even under pressure, suppress information and its findings? Just thinking about the consequences, what would this do to the body's credibility?
The aim was to attack President Assad that was winning a large part of Syria and freeing most of his territory. And when the international community that worked very hard to overthrow President Assad and allow Al-Qaeda and ISIS to gain territory, notwithstanding the huge investment that the Western countries and many Gulf countries, including Turkey, invested in Syria, it was just an excuse to look for, to bomb President Assad even though everybody knows that at the time of the bombing in 2018, it was too late to change the balance on the ground. So bombing for bombing, it didn't make any sense. And regardless, the US, UK, and France went ahead and bombed three positions, and they told us that they were chemical sites. I mean, how can you bomb chemical sites and not risk the spread of chemical products and material in the air that can affect everybody, including civilians in Syria? It didn't make absolutely no sense.
Peter Ford, Damascus, along with Russia, have said in the past that chemical attacks had been staged in Syria in order to incriminate Damascus. There are a lot of arguments that Douma was a false flag attack. Who benefits from these actions? The cover-ups, the alleged false flag attacks, who gains from all of this?
The Western powers and the so-called rebels, obviously. The Western powers needed to justify their illegal bombing of Syria. That's why they can never admit that it was carried out on the basis of a falsehood. That's why they must continue to sustain this lie. But there's another deeper and more topical reason. They have to justify the continuing war on Syria, which mainly takes the form of economic warfare in the shape of sanctions and withholding reconstruction assistance. In order to continue these cruel sanctions, which penalize and punish the ordinary Syrian people, the Western powers have to maintain the narrative that Assad is the president who gasses his people. So this fakery is the cornerstone of the propaganda strategy which underpins the economic warfare on Syria, and that continues, and that's why they continue to hound Syria over this non-issue of chemical weapons.
Elijah Magnier, same question to you. If you recall, Russia recently warned of possible upcoming false flag attacks to maybe justify exerting more pressure on Damascus. Who actually benefits from all of this?
Well, as Peter rightly said, the only beneficial is just to keep sustaining the narrative of what the U.S. is offering us, including the EU, to impose sanctions on Syria. And now the U.S. and the EU don't have any politics or any strategy to carry on in Syria. All their options are bad from their point of view. So what they are doing is to starve the population and thinking that maybe with sanctions they can curb the public opinion and turn it against President Assad, or perhaps they force Assad to come and negotiate with them. And this is not going to happen. The people are getting used to very harsh sanctions, and they are suffering. The local currency is devalued. All the goods are extremely unaffordable for everybody in Syria. And what the only benefit is, just because the Americans don't have any clear policy, they don't know what to do, to stay or to leave. So what they do is they maintain the sanctions under very different excuses, including the chemical attack.
Peter Ford, there were a lot of, the scandal coming out of the Douma attack, there was a lot of calls for reinvestigating the evidence. Instead of reopening the investigation into places like Douma, the OPCW took a step further and suspended Syria's rights at the weapons watchdog, citing a lack of cooperation. The question is, why should Syria cooperate with the OPCW at all?
That's a very good and fair question. The OPCW, since Douma, has the Americans and the British and the French have tried to give new powers and create new investigating committees and groups and sub-bodies over which they themselves will have more control, Syria and to some extent Russia, and to keep trying to exploit this issue. But the fact remains that the inspectors have only been able to carry out one proper investigation into an alleged site of an alleged use of chemical weapons, and that was Douma. And in that case, the first group of scientists and technical experts found that there was no evidence of a chemical attack. And this is why the Western powers have to keep trying to create new groups which will be more amenable to manipulation. It's no wonder that Syria simply refuses to have anything to do with them. They're illegal anyway. They've been set up, these new investigative bodies, they've been set up illegally in terms of the UN law.
Elijah Magnier, when the OPCW scandals were unfolding, one journalist took to social media writing that this should be a global scandal. Quote, the suppression of evidence from experts from the OPCW in order to push for war in Syria. This cover-up was ignored by mainstream media. Why was it ignored?
Because there is no accountability for whatever superpower and countries like the US, UK, and France are doing in Syria. Their presence is illegal, and the mainstream media is supporting them because they've been bombarded by the necessity to remove President Assad from power. Everybody has adopted this narrative, and the consequences were unimportant. At the end of the day, after 11 years or 10 years of war, the President Assad is still in power and the Syrian government is stable. Now they're not willing to back off and change the narrative. This is why they don't care about scandal. If the OPCW has lost credibility or not, all world leaders have lost credibility in Syria, not only in Syria, even in other parts of the Middle East. Therefore, this is no longer something that we can, those searching for the truth or voicing the truth can do much about it, at the exception of just mentioning it and just saying it. And the other side is just even closing their eyes or pursuing the same narrative.
Peter Ford, one last question for you. Here's a concerning thought. If the likes of the U.S., the UK, France, etc., they can pressure the OPCW for their own agendas, then they could very well be doing the same with other international bodies too. Give us your final thoughts.
Absolutely. And thankfully, much of the world is waking up to this danger. Interestingly, 29 countries all around the world voted against the April suspension of Syria's voting rights in OPCW. That's 29 countries who are very alive, I'm sure, to the danger that you just mentioned, that this could be just the beginning of how the international system is manipulated against them and not just Syria.
All right, thanks a lot. Allow me to thank my guest, Mr. Elijah Magnier, joining us from Brussels. Also, thanks to former British ambassador to Syria, Peter Ford, joining us from Manchester, and a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now, and see you next time.